briefly said, my name is Morten Aargaard. I am professor at Aarhus University, but when I'm not doing that, I am directing Restaurant Moment, or Restaurant Moment, together with my wife, Rikke.
Okay, so can you tell us what the concept is behind the restaurant? Because there are many restaurants in Aarhus and the area around Aarhus. What's right. special about this one?
This one is probably different from all other restaurants. It's not just a restaurant, you can say. The attempt is to take this concept of sustainability and take it to the edge, you can say, or bring it to its maximum in different directions. So the building that the restaurant is situated in is a building that is trying to demonstrate different new relatively simple sustainable building techniques. So the walls have been made from prefabricated straw bale elements with the clay on the inside and chalk on the outside, so the walls are can be composted in the garden, you can say. And because we try not just to do stuff but also to test out and do research on what we do, we have we show together with Aalborg University that the strength of these walls are such that they can in fact replace concrete elements. Mm-hmm. So you can make very tall buildings this way. There's a heating system which is a kind of development from the Finnish mass oven with a sort of burning temperature of 1000 degrees. There is no chimney in the system, but instead of that, there is a pipe underneath the floor that ends up in a smoke cleaner. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that we try to omit pure CO2 and hold back all the particles. Mm-hmm. And then, in principle, you could build a greenhouse at the end of your floor chimney and use the CO2, and the held back particles are essentially, well, they have the same characteristics as fertilizer, so we can water the garden with what would otherwise have been air pollution. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the most innovative element of the building, at least in my own mind, is the greenhouse that is placed next to the building. So all wastewater from the building, from the toilets and from the kitchen, ends up in a closed container underneath the greenhouse. Mm-hmm. So the plants only live from that. So we've shown in a prior project that the wastewater of one person completely waters and fertilizes 500 kilos of produce per year, mm-hmm. without you having to do anything. So in this way, it always saves you time and money, but also there can be no fertilizer, leaching out in the environment. And even in organic farming, you cannot do that. Mm. Now, if you speak to biologists, they can tell you that this is a highly hygienic system, because you never fertilize on top of the soil. You never put fertilizer on top of the soil, mm-hmm. as you do in typical farming. So that means there is no way of contaminating the plant.
So how does the water get from underneath this building into the greenhouse?
Very much like you would have done if you had made like a classical, I don't know the English word for this, I'm sorry, but typically when you have a house in the country and you're not connected to some...
You have a septic tank.
Yes, it could have been a septic tank, but instead of the septic tank, there is this closed container, mm-hmm. with plants growing in them. And actually the system already exists, but never with vegetables meant for eating. They're already, I think typically it's willow trees or something that you plant in these things. And this is very much the same logic behind it. Yeah. The idea is just, instead of having waste, because it's actually not wastewater in our minds, it's just a new resource. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of figuring out how to use the stuff.
Okay.
So that's the idea. The idea is really, you can say the underlying idea in the building is to try to protest against the concept of garbage. To say there is no such thing as garbage. Mm-hmm. There is only stuff you don't know where to put.
Okay.
When you know exactly where to put it, how to put it back into the system, then there is no waste, there is no garbage, there are just resources.
So have you achieved zero waste?
No, we haven't. We haven't. But I think we are on that track. Mm. And like any research project, as I think about this, as I think this is in a way, you you simply just have to start somewhere and think that you continue to improve based on the experiences that you make. So, I mean, it's easy to criticize us or anyone else for not being perfect, but that's not, I think, a reasonable or even interesting kind of criticism. The point is just, is not, I think, where you are, but where you are set to the direction that you head in, right? So these are some of the primary elements of the building. We use more or less no energy in heating. Our heating budget for the last winter season was less than 300 Danish kroner, and you can do the math of
Really?
that,
Wow.
In other currencies, which is pretty good in Denmark, that tends to be cold. So we make very little fertilizer. That's the drawback. So we show with the Institute of Bioscience or Department of Bioscience at Aarhus University that these plants are completely free of any contamination, which we knew already, but now we have shown it. And we try to sort of reach out with these technologies. So, say the Princess of Jordan visited us with her staff, and they now consider to use this technology in the whole nation of Jordan when grow for growing and for gardening systems and such, because you save a lot of water. You don't you use the same water twice, you can say, in the kitchen and watering the plants. So this is some of the background. Now the restaurant is purely vegetarian, and it has to be for different reasons. One reason is sort of a gastronomy-oriented reason, and another reason is a sustainability-oriented reason. Probably, well, at least according to many people who claim to know something about this, the you can say the most polluting industry is the food industry when you take all factors into account. I have heard different numbers, and I have not sort of checked the facts of these. So the listener is welcome to do so, but from what I have heard, it's 33% of the surface area of the planet that is only devoted to producing beef, and that's an insane amount, right?
33%.
Yeah, of the surface area of the land area in the world.
Wow.
So of course you need to cut down rainforest. Of course you need to intensify the produce of food for all these animals. And this just simply comes down to our choices in everyday life. So when people perhaps feel that, well, huge challenges we have in the world, climate change, which may in the end kill all of us in a sort of foreseeable future, these things you can do something about simply by acting. And that's the upside of it. And that's a positive thing. So for that reason, we wish not to give lectures about these things, because so many other people do that. It's easy to YouTube your way to that kind of information. We instead wish to sort of, in a positive and practically oriented framework, show people what you can do with vegetables. So therefore, the primary source of produce for the restaurant is our own garden, which is driven as a permaculture garden. And that means that it tries to copy how a forest is naturally created in the wild. And the idea behind that is to say, well, you combine all different kinds of plants, you don't fight anything. So you don't you d really don't, when you do a forest garden, you really don't get weed as per se.
So you're not weeding.
No, we don't. At least very little. We do not try to prevent insects from being there. Not at all, actually. Because, you know, instead we have bees, and because that's an important part. Insects are a very important part of a natural ecoclimate. So essentially we have a variety of different plants, and the kitchen is not supposed to come up with a dish and then buy stuff for that dish. Instead, the kitchen is supposed to look around and say, what do we have? And try to make food of the highest possible taste qualities based on that. And what we can't produce in our own garden, because we cannot produce enough in our own garden, we get from either wild nature around
mm-hmm.
us, which is the next sort of circle of produce, and from direct collaborations with small local farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And here we say to them that we're willing to pay more than they perhaps could have had. So
mm-hmm.
that's sort of the complete upside down thinking
yeah.
of typical trade, right? We're willing to pay them a better price if they will make a more ethical product.
Mm.
And that's, of course, interesting to them, because farmers are typically used to being, you know, really stressed with prices from supermarkets and all those things, and being, you can say, led to do mass production
mm.
and led to try to produce as many kilos as possible. And we try to tell them that no, we will pay in the direct trade with them, we'll pay the same as we would have paid if there wasn't a grocer in between.
Yeah.
But we want ethically produced product.
And that, those are long-term arrangements, presumably.
Hmm.
It can't really be a short-term arrangement.
Well, I mean, we don't make like contracts or anything
mm.
with them. I think most farmers would actually like to work this way, so it's not very difficult.
Mm.
But, well, we've existed a year and a half now, and we basically use the same... I mean, we collaborate with the same farmers now as we did then.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the whole idea is very situated. It's very based on where we are.
Yeah.
And for that reason, we can't just look at some web page to see, well, there are all these billion places of buying beets, you know,
mm.
because if we collaborate with local farmers, well, I mean, that farm is there next year as well.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And some of these places are very small. Some of them are hardly even farmers.
Mm.
Some of them, you know, are people who have some asparagus
mm.
or something. It could be like more like a garden thing than
yeah.
a farm thing.
Yeah.
And that's completely fine with us, because that's the direction that we actually believe in a larger and perhaps even more political
mm.
scale.
Yeah.
Mm.
So your menu is very innovative. I mean, I've been to other vegetarian restaurants, not in Denmark,
mm-hmm.
I have to say. And I know what I sort of would have
mm.
expected, but when we came here to eat, it was very different, very pleasant, very enjoyable. I mean, you do things like pressing oil out of carrot tops. Now, I never would have thought about that.
Well, I mean, yeah, and that's even just a small element. I mean, some of the things we serve that I personally like is something like pollen. I don't know if you had that.
No.
No. Then perhaps you just had the small menu, because that's the
yes.
least. That's not very innovative.
Okay.
All the fun stuff happens in the big menu.
Okay.
So, for example, we continuously watch the bees
mm.
because bees, they collect more pollen than what they need themselves.
Yeah.
So when they have enough, we put up a small pollen trap, and that works so that the bee can enter the beehive, but it would scrape off the pollen
mm.
at the hind legs of the bees
yeah.
that fall into a small jar, and we just serve it fresh as it is without doing anything with it. And then that tastes different during the season, because it depends on which flowers
yeah.
it has visited. And it's a way of trying to bring the guest as close as possible to what happens outside the windows,
yeah.
where they can see the bees fly by, right?
Yeah.
So they get that on a little spoon, and underneath the pollen, there are four drops of cucumber oil and
mm-hmm.
one drop of rose oil. And
mm-hmm.
that's it. That's a complete serving.
Wow.
And so when you have 11 servings, then you can play with things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that playfulness is really important. And I guess that's where what you hinted at as
mm.
well. Because well, first of all, the kitchen is, of course, under pressure, because they need to develop new things all the time, because nature changes all the time.
Yeah.
And you can't really plan ahead, because you may say, oh, soon it will be season for this or that,
mm.
so we need to plan. Well, if local farmers just did not have any of that this year, or maybe there was some beetle, or maybe there was a lot of rain, well, then we don't have
mm.
that. So we need to sort of, from day to day, be able to adjust. And I think if the point is to show people what you can do with greens, then
mm.
that playfulness and wow effect is important. to bring people out of this classical idea that a dish is something where there is a steak and then there is some side.
Mm.
And then they think, well, I can't get full and I can't have a full meal if I just eat the side.
Mm.
And that's how many people think about vegetarian food.
Yeah.
And the idea is that you can skip all that idea of what a dish is and then have a free approach to that.
Okay, I think maybe we were not prepared for that because we thought, wow, I can't remember how many it was, but 7 or 8 different dishes. We thought, that's going to be a lot.
Yeah.
But actually, they're all very small servings, and
you
have different experiences, and it's a very interesting experience.
Thank you.
I wonder if you could say a little bit about how you actually run the restaurant. Do you have employees?
Yes, we
yes.
do. Otherwise, it could not work. So, well, my wife and I do the directing, you can say. So we do the economy, and most of the time we are the one running the floor as well. Meaning that we are the waiters and we serve drinks and such. I guess there are two reasons for that. And one is that until economy is so good that we can employ both a full kitchen staff and waiters, then we do that part. But another reason is that we are the faces of the restaurant, you can say. So it should not be like an anonymous place where you just come in and some young guy or girl who doesn't know what's really on the menu or doesn't know what this is all about is serving. It's important that we, all waiters, completely understand why we do what we can do and answer all questions and sort of take the guest by the hand and show you, sort of give them the idea that we know what's happening and we have some surplus of energy, right? So the kitchen, of course, we have hired chefs. Right now, in this moment, we have 2 chefs and 1 apprentice chef. We have had for a period 3 chefs and 1 apprentice chef when we had the most staff. Yeah, so that's sort of it these days. Yeah, so that's sort of, we are interested in, of course, over time, increasing the amount of the number of staff, but that's sort of a slow process where we keep sort of looking at how much can we grow compared to with how much money do we make and how do we make sure that everybody who is here follow the same ideology or logic or thinking.
Okay.
We should all be on
yeah.
the same page. That's really important.
So one of the really key issues for me is, what do you wish your staff could do when they came to work for you? Or do they already do it? What sort of competences are you looking for?
Well, for the kitchen, we need people who, of course, are very good at cooking. That's obvious. And who are, you know, willing to share the ideology. Meaning that, and I know that from university and I know that from here, it's not all that different, that there are different ways of being an employee, you know. You can count up your hours and think that, you meet in between this hour and that hour, and then you do those tasks that are at hand. But you can also, instead of that, take responsibility and think, well, I'm not so preoccupied with hours, I'm more preoccupied with tasks and what need to be done, and to see it as a kind of game, as a, you know, sort of take this playful, I mean, you cannot have a playful, creative menu if you don't work in a playful, creative manner.
Yeah.
So those things need to go hand in hand. You cannot organize a staff and say, well, now we all meet between, you all meet in at 4 and then you leave at 10 and before 6 then you do this.
Mm.
Then you cannot have this creative environment that we're interested in.
Yeah.
So, we wish for all staff members, regardless of their position, to take responsibility mm-hmm. and to take part in this and to, what can you say, share the ideology or see where we're going with this and why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are large the other way as owners, you can say. So where if employees don't count ours, neither do we.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
If employees don't, you know, sit around and say, well, I need to do this and that and blah, blah, blah. If they are sort of sharing this work with us, or if it's like a shared project, you can say, then of course, if an employee says, I need to go to France to see my mother, or I need to do whatever, then of course, I mean, you don't need to say, well, you have had so many days of vacation. Mm. And then, I mean, you try to keep the, of course you need to control your administration, but that administration can be upfront.
Mm.
So that is your entrance to the company, that is through the glasses of administration, or that administration can be in the back, letting out the project and the common things and the playfulness. Mm. So we try not to have a hierarchy. Of course we have that underneath, because when we need to make a quick decision, then everybody knows how this hierarchy works.
Mm-hmm.
But on an everyday basis, it's not very visible that there is a hierarchy, because mm-hmm. again, the best idea should win. I'm not really sure I'm answering your question, but but these are some of our thoughts about how to have staff, you can say.
I think I was thinking about whether it would be an advantage for the staff you hire to have been schooled in sustainability principles and have a basic idea of what it entails.
Yeah, well, that can be an advantage, but otherwise it'll be schooled here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's enough to have an interest.
Mm-hmm.
It's enough to wanting to do something, and then we figure out stuff together. Because so many things are obvious if you just get rid of prejudices and ideas or whatever you come with, and you just think, well, how can we do things as ethical as possible?
Yeah.
And if you do that as a group, then you move somewhere.
So you never find yourself in the situation where somebody is throwing something away and you say, oh, stop, you could be doing this.
Yeah, well, it happens, but not so much anymore. I mean, there are things that we do that you don't typically do. I mean, some people, so we do once in a while have those discussions, but that's like the carrot top one.
Mm.
That's like, if people just get used to thinking that mm-hmm. the philosophy is that everything is a product, then, you know, it becomes a challenge that is fun to take. Then it becomes like a sport
mm-hmm.
to say, how can we use everything?
Yeah.
How is, you know, how are the, I don't know, how are apple peels a product? How are potato peels a product?
Have you used apple peel?
Yeah, we have. We have made a sauce out of it that was only made from apple peels.
Wow. Okay. Well, I will restrain myself from asking for hundreds of recipes.
We don't have recipes. We don't make recipes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So does that mean you don't repeat anything because that was last week and you've forgotten it and now it's this week?
Yeah, I mean, of course we remember what we did last week, but maybe we can improve it.
Yeah.
But no, we don't write down recipes that way. Actually, we have been talking about whether we should do like a book of recipes one day and start to write down things, but so far we haven't. And you know, and maybe I should even add, and let me know if I'm going into too many places at once, but that is all captured by the name of the restaurant. We call it Moment for a Reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that it tries to capture the moment.
Yeah.
And it's okay, you know, that there is no more of something, because that's how nature is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a weird and if you think about it, arrogant demand of modern people that they must have strawberries in December. It's weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird idea, you know. At some point, the strawberry season ends, and that's why it's so great all the time. That's because, well, it's sad it ends, but then something new starts, and it's like that all the year except winter. But then you get to open all your boxes of fermentation and dehydrated stuff and all that you have preserved. And you know, and so in that way, it's always a new joy.
Yeah.
Whereas if everything is available all the time, then it's just, you know, boring.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's the idea with the name, and not writing, writing down recipes that you can just repeat and repeat is part of that, because it's okay. So we did that dish, and now we can't do it again. And next year, of course, there will be strawberries if that was it again. But then you want to do something new with that, right? And that's how it should be, I think.
So what about the future? Do you have a direction in which you want to go? Are there lots of projects in your mind that you want to undertake?
There are too many.
Yeah. Like we've heard about, possibly there'll be a recipe book.
Yeah. One idea is to do more about drinks. So we all already make some of our own drinks using various fungus cultures and whatever is in season. I have a personal dream that I don't know if ever will work out here, and that is to have a complete winery next to the restaurant that will make all the wines for the restaurant based on all other kinds of things and grapes. Because if you think about it, the only reason, at least that I know of, why you've ever made wine from grapes is because that the natural sugar content in the grapes is so high that, you know, fermentation starts spontaneously.
Yeah.
But in modern day life, there is sugar everywhere, there is honey everywhere, and if you're not afraid of using just a little, then you can make incredible wines from apples or buckthorns or even herbs. And that's interesting, because first of all, there has been an incredible universe of flavor in grape wine, and I think for every single berry or fruit or whatever, there is just as big a universe that has never been discovered. But you know, the wine industry is a huge factor in pollution. It's incredible how much pesticides has been used, and all of that is of course made in such huge quantities now, because France, Italy, etc. need to export this to the rest of the world. But what if, you know, we focused on what we were really good at? So let's say we could make some great in Denmark, great apple wine, great cherry wine, great
blackberry,
things, and whatever worked here. And then if you drove 100 kilometers of some direction, you would find in some new traditions another little universe where people did something else that was close to them. I mean, the world would be really interesting to travel in, right? And so I think that's a direction that we would like to explore, to use spontaneous fermentation, you know, like wild wild yeast, and try to have as little intervention in the winemaking process as possible. And to play with that. And perhaps even to completely give up categories such as beer and white wine and red wine, and just say, well, there is some produce, there is some fermentation process, do whatever. That's one idea. But there are many others, and it's difficult to see, you know, exactly. I mean, we cannot predict where we will be in even 1 year. That's part of
it. So as I've been working in this project, I have come across the principle that there are five basic aspects to sustainability. And it seems to me that you covered most of them, actually. So the first one is about values, and this is obviously based on very strongly held values. Another one is about collaboration, and you talked about collaboration with farmers. I wasn't expecting the collaboration with universities, but that is also part of it. Talking about the future, and there you seem to be very open to what might happen in the future, rather than having a specific vision about what happens in the future. And then the remaining two are about systems thinking, which I think is very well demonstrated with your water system and your building system and your menu. And the last one is about strategic thinking. Maybe that's the one which I haven't heard so much about. But maybe you can think of something where you are being strategic.
Well, one can think that it's a good strategy, no, not always to reveal one's strategy. No, I think actually there's a lot of strategy in this, but I mean, it's a weird word, because I think you need to define strategy a bit then, because you can say everything you do is in a way a strategy, unless it's completely chaotic. So, I mean, in which sense do you, I mean, do you mean like a political strategy, or do you mean a strategy as how to do daily routines?
Yeah. I think strategy probably links values and future. So, and
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we have strategies for more or less everything, but those strategies are continuously open for debate. But you see, we do this not to have a restaurant. If this does not work out, then most likely we will not just open another restaurant. We do this for a very particular reason, and I think maybe I was not good enough to point it out in the beginning, but the idea is that we wish to act on the sustainability crisis in the world that has to do with the environment. And therefore you can say the entire restaurant is a very deliberate strategy in that sense, because our ambition is not to have a restaurant and then have a strategy within that restaurant. Our ambition is to try and act on this situation. You can say, let's imagine that you and your family suddenly is confronted with a dangerous predator. That rarely happens these days, but let's say. What would you do? I mean, you would obviously act on it. Let's say the predator hasn't really seen you. It's a little far away. You can see if you continue in the direction you're walking, you will certainly meet this bear or tiger. Or then you would most likely decide, okay, this is not a good situation. You need to sneak out of this somehow. It's a kind of insanity to decide that you must keep on walking, because that's what you do. You're a person who walks, and therefore you must keep on walking, and you will be eaten by this bear, but you know, I have to keep on walking. That's insanity. Now that is an analogy to what we're doing, you can say, because we have now enough knowledge to say that the current direction of actions in the world will lead us to absolute destruction. We know this. I mean, it's not a question of if you believe in this. It's more a matter of if you understand it. So, I mean, if you have any belief in science, then you would agree that you know this, at least if you read about it and sort of try to take it seriously. So you can say continuing this walk in the same direction is madness. So you need to do something about your life. Now, of course, I still would like to be a professor at Aarhus University, and we would still like to have a good life and all that. But the question is, how can you as an individual do something about this? And one way was to collaborate with this brilliant inventor who lives nearby, who has made the building, right? And he's made many incredible inventions, but none of them has ever surfaced. None of them have ever been like demonstrated to a larger public. And you know, if you just make a sustainable house out of straw and makes it look like it's made out of straw, and you know, it will attract a very small audience. And the whole idea with the restaurant is to show these things to people, to say, well, look, this is a straw bale house, this is all blah blah blah, and attract people not because they necessarily want to see that, but because they've heard about this incredibly interesting restaurant and want to eat there. And then you leave a perhaps even unconscious, or at least you leave some sort of influence with those people. And that's the idea. Everybody is up front in defense in debates, right? You can easily tell people about, well, we need to do, and the world is sinking and blah, and we'll all die. All these stories, we're filled with them. We don't know what to do. And people, you know, get sick of it. They can't handle it.
Yeah.
We have too much information in the world. You can easily make a Facebook page writing, ah, everything is ending. And, you know, everybody will just scroll past it. So the idea is, how can you give people an impression, an experience they remember, where this is, sustainability is part of it, but they, where they feel they don't miss anything, but they feel they want more of that. So therefore, the restaurant is there for that particular purpose. Now, there is a direction where we simply just want to, we're just like the family who meets the bear. We're nothing more than that. We just want to survive. And we just want other people to survive as well, and we don't want to kill the bear. We just want to, you know, have a good life, and and for life to keep being there. So if we have waiters at some point, if we have more time on our hands, most likely we will make other decisions connected to the restaurant that may be completely at completely different levels, like a political level or something else. Trying to realize that, but we just, so you can say that it's a deliberate strategy to try to show people something instead of telling them something. And where the restaurant just needs to get better and better and better, and we are so far from where we want to be still, then the moment it's possible, we would like to apply other means to go in the same direction.
It seems to me that you're getting a lot, you're getting noticed a lot, and I think I've read places that you're close to being Michelin star quality. So I think you're getting a lot of attention in Denmark.
Yeah, we are. And slowly also outside of Denmark. It, not so often, but we have been had guests who have traveled and flown here from other countries just to eat here and fly back home again.
That's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable at all. But maybe it is.
Yes, yes.
Because, you know, it's not sustainable to have a car. But if you can drive somewhere and do something good with being there. So, no, it's not sustainable to fly to Denmark and fly back home to have a meal. That's crazy. In seen in isolation. But if people do that, to go home, tell the story, try to lead a more sustainable life, if this is part of a change where you can do that and get attention and be sort of, you know, people go there not just to eat, but to get inspired for how to live, then it may be an unsustainable necessary step in that. So one always has to see the larger picture.
Okay, now I have a very mundane question, which everybody asks, and that is, can you really make a living through running a restaurant like this? I'm guessing that the answer is that some things cost more, some things cost less. So the question is, how does it balance out?
Yeah, well, I certainly think you can. I mean, we cannot yet, personally, but that's out of the that's based on the decisions we make. So we make the decisions to invest in the place, to say, well, before we have a living from this place, we need to have as many strong staff members as possible. We need to invest in the greenhouse and everything that we can do in order to sort of strengthen the place. But we could have other priorities, because now, right now, we're so fortunate that I have this job on the side of this, and we can live from that. But we could have lived from it with different priorities, and one day we will be able, because I'm sure, because it's certainly heading in the direction that it makes more money. And we've only existed in a year and a half, and everybody knows that starting off, especially something weird like this in the countryside, where getting noticed is the essence. I mean, then we know that takes time. So so surprisingly, I'd say you can. I think that you cannot make a living on such things if you compromise. if you decide that, well, but people also want a bit of meat, and they also want, and we need to please everybody, and you know, and we should have these plastic tables because they're cheaper, and if you start to say, well, we want to go in a direction, but we also compromise. Well, we have a lot of organic stuff, and so, but, and of course, not everything, and because then you're just sort of in the swamp of everything else. I think you need to have the guts and the strength to stand out and say, this is who we are, and dare live out that. Because then people will find you and find you interesting, and you need to be more interesting and more yourself, and not just have a story to sell, but the reality to back it up. I think one of the worst terms, I so hate it, is storytelling. Even though that's all that we do, you can say, because we spend so much time telling about this place. But storytelling, in my prejudiced mind, indicates that you try to sell something that is totally standard and mundane by adding to that a good story about it.
Oh, I
Now you have to,
see. Yeah.
and maybe that's not true, but you need to tell the stories that deserve to be told. You need to tell the stories that are true about what you do, and you need to, of course, to tell that in the best possible way. And if you do that, and if you're honest about that, then I think it's possible. But as said, I think we could not go half of the way and then make a living.
Okay, I've learned a lot. I think I'd like to wrap up by asking about where Denmark stands on the matter of vegetarianism. Because coming from Britain, as I told you before, coming from Britain, I found it very difficult to find. I'm not vegetarian, but I like vegetarian food. And I found it almost impossible to find a vegetarian restaurant when we first arrived in Denmark 20 years ago. I found it almost impossible to cater for some vegetarian friends who came. And I know that when I was in Britain, I had the experience that I had some Belgians visit me and I took them to a vegetarian restaurant and they thought this was incredibly strange. So where does Denmark stand, do you think, in terms of vegetarianism?
I think we are behind in many ways. And even if we were better, I think we should be even better than that. And I think even that vegetarianism is not a goal, it's actually, I mean, still in the whole producing of milk and eggs, there are lots of problems, right? So I think vegetarian, actually, I think that vegetarianism, that's a whole new discussion, but I think perhaps that vegetarianism should be replaced at some point with a concept still not existing, like ethicism or something, because you need to think about where the product comes from. I'd love to have some milk or cheese or something from a place where I know the system and how the cattle is being raised and all that. And but you know, if it's mass production and the cattle, as you may know, even in organic farming, the only rule is that the newborn, what do you say,
Calf.
calf, has to be with its mother for one day before being taken away,
Really?
in order to get enough milk to the industry. So I mean, there are lots of ethical issues with vegetarian food, but it's certainly a step. It's just important to say it's not the final step. It's perhaps the first step. We need to take many steps. I think so. It's just to say that even if we were better, then I think we need to run to get much better. I think we're behind, but I think there is a clear and positive development, because if you look at the younger generation, it's a completely different picture than if you look at the older. I think that. So we are situated in the countryside, and we get a lot of, you can say, mature and older people, especially the men, who have a lot of ideas about meat as if that makes them masculine, as if they ever hunt anything themselves, as if there is any masculine in buying meat from the supermarket. Sorry, but. I think I clearly see a development, because if you look at the younger generation, there are so many in Denmark who now become vegetarians of young people. Probably more girls than boys, but still a lot of boys as well think in those terms and don't have these ideas. It's, you know, run around with these false ideas in their heads that protein only comes from meat, which is completely misunderstood, or that it's difficult to get enough nourishment as a vegetarian, which is completely not true, or that that you cannot get full from vegetables, which is also completely not true, etc. And all those ideas, I think, are sort of they're much less present in the younger generation, and that gives me hope to say that we have started this.
But when you say that you think Denmark is behind in reducing the amount of meat eaten or used, are you comparing Denmark to anywhere else?
I think if you go to Southern Europe, for example, there's a long tradition of having vegetable-based dishes. Not that that people are more vegetarian, but if you compare different countries, how much meat they eat in percent per person living in the country, certainly the Nordic countries are up there among those who eat the most meat.
Yeah.
I think the state, I don't remember the stats, so please check. I'm not completely sure, but I think the states are also up there. But if you look at many other countries, like Asian countries and Southern European countries, there's a long food tradition for having a lot, I mean, using many more vegetarian and vegetable based products.
Except they don't call it vegetarian
food,
they just call it food.
Exactly. Exactly. And if you notice it, we don't write, I don't think we write vegetarian on the website. Maybe we do somewhere, but it's really toned down. Because it's not, I mean, we shouldn't have a big sign with that, because it's, as you say, it's simply food, and we have to think different about food. We don't have to invent a category.
Right. So now is the time when I say, is there something that you think you would like to talk about which I haven't mentioned?
Too much. But no, I think our conversation captures most of what it is that we try to do. And I hope that, I mean, if I have not said it already, I hope to sort of communicate the message that that you know, there are different levels in which you can try to make a change if you agree that we have big problems relating to the environment that may be our biggest problems in modern day. And you can go into politics and you can try to make long-term decisions, but you can also, in a very simple way, grow stuff in your own garden, allow insects to be there, try to once in a while have a walk in nature and pick something from the wild instead of going to the supermarket. I mean, there are many very small things you can do. And I think the most important thing isn't really to do one thing or the other, but to sort of keep in mind that if you make ethical choices in your life, then it matters. I think that's the most important thing to tell in this context.
Yeah.